Our guest today is a young man from Kenya. Is that still called a crown colony?
Yes, it's crown colony and protectorate.
And protectorate. A country where people by the hundreds of thousands are seeking to be free. Mr. Tom Mboya, a young man, are you 28 yet?
I am 28,
Who has been providing his people in Kenya with leadership. Mr. Mboya, we're glad to have you in this country because most of us don't know much about Kenya.
Well, I think that's true. I visited this country 2.5 years ago, and at that time I noticed that many people did not seem to have heard even of the name, and most of them seemed to only have come to hear of Kenya by reading about Mau Mau violence.
Oh, yes.
And they seem to, in their minds, to have these two as synonyms.
Uh-huh. Well, that gave you a kind of a difficult situation, didn't it?
I must say, yes. And but I think that in the last 2.5 years, there has been quite a change. I find that a lot of people know much more about not only Kenya, but about Africa. And the audiences that I have addressed seem to be intelligently curious.
Uh-huh.
The questions are much higher standard than 1956. And of course, I have also noticed the amount of space provided by most of the magazines here and also newspapers to Africa. I think there has been a very definite change.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because it seems to me important that there should be a change. Africa is so important to the world of the future. I think we all ought to know more about it.
Well, certainly, I think there is a lot going on in Africa which is of significance to the American people. Kenya is of course still a colony, and I said it was also a protectorate. The protectorate is just the small 10-mile strip at the coast.
Well, now,
on the east coast.
What's the difference between a protectorate and a colony?
Well, a colony is the difference is, of course, in the legal status. A colony is entirely the possession of the British Crown.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a protectorate is an area in which the British Crown have only powers to govern on behalf of somebody else, on the basis of an agreement. Now, the protectorate part of Kenya is regarded as a possession of the Sultan of Zanzibar.
Oh, and the British are protecting it for the Sultan
of
Zanzibar.
Yes, and for the services of using that land, the British pay a rental each year to the Sultan of Zanzibar. Whereas the inner part of the country, which is a colony, is Crown colony, and the British, under the colonial status, own all the land in the colony.
And that is most of Kenya.
That is, well, the whole of Kenya is, in fact, crown land.
Uh-huh.
To the
and that means that it's governed actually from London.
That's right. That's right. Now, we have the whole country is about 225,000 square miles, and in Kenya we have about 6 million Africans, but we also have an immigrant community, Europeans, some Asians, and also some Arabs.
People who have come from other countries.
Yes.
You're using the term immigrant is very interesting. We haven't, from our part, thought of them as immigrants. I suppose they're immigrants in exactly the same sense that the people who came to America from England and Holland and so on were immigrants to start out with.
Oh, yes, I think the same sense, except at home, we don't often call them immigrants. We call them settlers, which is a word that has a different connotation from just an immigrant. Now, the Europeans came to Kenya about 55 years ago, mainly to settle on the land. The Asians, on the other hand, were brought into the country in 1895 to help build up the railway line from Mombasa, the coast, to Kisumu on Lake Victoria. This was some form of indentured labor. Oh, but when the railway line was completed 5 years later, most of them decided to stay. And they have developed since then to become the country's business and commercial men.
Oh,
and they own most of the businesses. Most of the commercial interests are in the hands of the Asians.
Now, you say Asians. Are they mostly Chinese or Indians, or where are they from?
No, most of these are Indians. But of course, following the partition of India, they also have had a number of difficulties, and especially as between the Muslims and the Hindus.
Oh, yeah, so some of them, if they had came from there now, would be Pakistanis,
yes,
rather than Indians.
The Muslim element is now considered as Pakistanis.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, of course, we have our own little experiences of the Pakistani-India Cold War. And,
yes,
and between our Asian community.
Well, now what that is the Pakistanis and the Indians in
Kenya.
Kenya, even though they originally came from one country, are now at odds with each other because they're separate countries.
Yes, that's quite right.
Well, now what's the proportion of people? You say there are about 6 million Africans in,
yes,
Kenya.
Yes, we have 6 million Africans and 60,000 Europeans. It is misleading to think that the 60,000 Europeans are all settlers, because most of them are administrators, some of them are commercial men, some of them are industrialists, and some are professional men.
Oh, as by settlers you mean these people that own the land.
Yes. Now the element that really owns and lives on the land is about 10,000 only.
About 10,000. That is one in 100 of the people in Kenya is a European.
Is a European.
And of those, one in six is a landowner.
That's right.
I think it's good for us to get that proportion because,
yes,
it,
because sometimes
helps us to see.
Sometimes this whole question of the people talk to us about the interests of the rights of the white settlers,
and their rights
one,
to the land.
Yes, and one gets the impression that people here think that there's quite a sizable European population in the country.
Uh-huh.
The relationship is exactly 10,000 white settlers to 6 million Africans.
Uh-huh.
In addition, we have 150,000 Asians. That's the Muslims and the Hindus, and about 25,000 Arabs.
Uh-huh.
The origin of the Arabs, of course, is that they came during the slave trade and established a very strong position in the coastal belt, including the island of Zanzibar.
Oh, yes. So there are many of them in this protectorate area along,
yeah,
the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Now, the presence in Kenya of a European settled community poses for us a much more difficult problem in our struggle for freedom than our friends in the West Coast. In the West Coast, you have no European settlers. And there,
well, the West Coast of Africa, like in Ghana,
Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
There are no settlers, and the result is that their struggle is directly with the British government. We see that where such a situation exists, the British government tends...
Pardon me for interrupting now. In the case in Ghana and Nigeria, there are no Europeans who are economically concerned in the outcome then.
Oh, there are. There are those who have businesses.
But not their homes.
No European owns land. The difference is
oh,
that
yeah.
no European owns land in Nigeria or Ghana. the relationship is probably brought out clearly if we look at some of the population figures. The area exclusively reserved for white settlement is approximately 13,000 square miles.
13,000 square miles for 10,000 people.
Yes. And this is the best land in the country, in the highlands. This is the area where we grow most of our cash crops, like coffee and tea. Mm-hmm. And therefore it is probably, in terms of economic factors, it is the most important part of the country and provides the backbone to our economy. As against this, Africans have 52,000 square miles reservation.
52,000 as against 13,000.
52 as against 13,000.
And for 6 million people as against 10,000.
As against 10,000 people. And in consequence, we have a situation today where in some African areas, we have population density of between 800 to 900 people per square mile.
That is, you've got a reservation for the Europeans where each European settler has a square mile on which in other areas 800 people have to live.
That's
now,
right.
Those aren't farmers, of course.
No. Which one?
Where the 800 people live.
Well, the 800 people living in one square mile, in other words, the Africans in this one square mile, are entirely dependent on a subsistence economy. They are peasants, essentially.
Peasants.
Yeah.
Just barely enough to live on.
Just barely enough to live on. And this is why it is even a more serious problem, because the entire basis of our people's life is on the land. Security for old age is bound up with the ownership of land. And as the population grows, this security has become more and more one of serious concern to our people in terms of their children, in terms of the people themselves in old age and so on. And especially as there is no security in the employment areas, in the urban areas, most of our people go out to work but always return to these reservations as this is the only place where they can have some amount of security.
That is, there are no such industries like the diamond mines in South Africa.
None.
That take and keep thousands of workers.
There are none. And all we have is employment in the service industries in the urban areas. But otherwise, because of lack of security in employment, lack of good housing facilities, and other social provisions in the urban areas, most of our people work and come back to the reservations. Now,
could I ask you a question here, Mr. Mboya? I'm a little troubled that I don't know more about it, but how is it possible for these 10,000 European settlers to take over this best land in Africa? Of course, we think of colonialism as having been established, well, in our case, 200 years ago, in India almost as long ago, but you say this happened only 55 years ago. That's practically the modern world.
Yes, well, what happened was that the history of Kenya is very much one of the early attempts in the early part of the 20th century by Europeans to find or by the British to find trading posts on the east coast of Africa on the way to India.
Oh, yes.
And Kenya was first the property, as it were, of the British East India Company.
Oh, yes.
The colonial status of Kenya only came about in 1920.
Is that right?
Yes.
It's difficult for us to understand that. That's after the Suez Canal had been dug.
Right.
And
yes.
Yeah.
After the Second World War. Now,
was that by conquest? Did they go in and shoot people? Or?
Well, what happened was that there was British and Portuguese traders on their way to the East, to the way, to the East Indies, who made stops on the coastal belt of East Africa, and they established their trading posts and also filling, as it were, filling stations. And the British East India Company came and settled around Mombasa, and then they discovered that in the interland, in Uganda, by then it was merely known as Buganda, there was a very rich and wealthy kingdom, and they wanted a way of getting the cotton and other goods from the interland to the coast. And this is when the idea of a railway line was hatched. The Germans were also interested in East Africa. And when the Germans saw that the English were interested, they also brought their they brought a group of missionaries, and these people went to the Muslim king of Buganda to try and convert him to Christianity. Then of course there was very serious competition between the Muslims and the Christians, and if you follow the history of Uganda, you will read of the Buganda Martyrs. And these are the sort, the Christians, the Catholics, who were killed by the king after his conversion to the Muslim faith. However, what really took place then was that the kings of Buganda, seeing this competition between the Germans and the British, decided that they would seek protection of the British against the Germans. And that's why Uganda today is a protectorate and not a colony.
Oh, so
it's four kingdoms in Uganda. All of them are protectorates under agreements signed at the time.
So their situation is a little better than yours, more like
yes.
the Uganda, like Ghana and Nigeria.
Yeah, that's right. But the Germans then, of course, shifted to Tanganyika, and they established a colony in Tanganyika. The British at the time were reluctant to do anything, to take over Kenya as a colony, and only guaranteed to give protection to the British East India Company in her interests. Until, of course, the railway line, they started building the railway line, and then the British government decided they had invested too much in this railway line to leave it in private hands. And so they started some form of administration. At that time it was called the East African High Commission, the East African Commission for the East African Protectorates. Mm-hmm. Even Kenya was then regarded as a protectorate and not
a colony.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So during the building of the railway line, of course, some Europeans were brought into the country to help with building the railway line. Now, I think one of the explanations about taking away of the land lies in the differences between our system of land tenure and that of the Europeans. Under our system, all the land belonged to the tribe or the clan, and we did not have any fencing of the land.
No fences.
But most of our people were nomadic. They traveled from place to place for grazing land, and also for water according to the seasons. So that to an outsider, this would have appeared to be empty land from time to time.
When there weren't any people on it, they would assume that nobody owned
it. That's right. But in fact, despite the absence of fencing and or the absence of actual inhabitants there, the land was owned. Some Europeans coming and finding some rather empty spaces decided this was nobody's land, and since there were no fences, they started laying claim to this this land. This is how they started penetrating into the country. And then, of course, we had some elders and chiefs who were approached by the European immigrants and very seriously, on a misunderstanding. Our people, under our tribal law, nobody can sell land. Land is unsellable. Nobody can dispose of land. It is forever the property of the clan, the property of the people. But any of us can give our friends the rights to grazing or the rights to temporary cultivation rights.
To share the use of it.
Yes, the right of usage. And so long as you confine yourself to using it and and conform to certain traditional standards, no, you can in fact live there for generations and have similar claims and similar voice with the indigenous people without being disturbed. They could not possibly have entered into an agreement to sell land because this is just not done. And even today, you will find that in our own areas, the people still own land on this basis. Our people cannot just accept the European contention, A, that they found the land was empty, and B, that they bought it from some people.
Oh, yes. Neither one of those points you accept.
It's possible. Neither of them is accepted. However, when our people began to realize what was happening, even as early as 1905, they immediately protested to the British government against this claim of ownership by the white settlers.
As long ago as 1905, yes. That's 15 years before you became a colony.
That's right. And in 1915, an attempt was made by our people to send a delegation to Britain to protest over the conduct and behavior of the white settlers in treatment of the land, because we regarded land as something very sacred. These pleas were not listened to.
So the dispossession by the European settlers has not been without protest, even from the very start.
Oh, it has always been with protest. And these protests have increased as the years went by. And of course, as the economy changed and the pressures increased, so did the protest increase. Until 1926, the Kikuyu people decided to send a delegation to Britain.
The Kikuyu, now that's one of the largest tribes.
One of the largest tribes. And the tribe which was primarily affected, since the highlands happened to be in their own tribal area. They sent a delegation to Britain to protest over their land rights and also to demand the restoration of the land that had been taken away. In 1930, the British government appointed a commission, a royal commission, to come to Kenya and inquire into the claims of land rights by various groups. And in 1933, this commission's report was published. It is normally referred to as the Carter Commission on Land. And this commission then established that this is the commission which established these boundaries of 13,000 square miles exclusively reserved for white settlement. This was an attempt, in their view, to settle the question of who owned what land in the country. But by so doing, they went even further to upset our people, because they our people could not understand how this land would be taken away from them on any basis at all. An attempt was made to compensate some of the families, some of the big Kikuyu families, by payments of money or provision of alternative land in other parts of the country. But this could not meet the basic argument of our people that land was not, you could not dispose of land, either sell it or just give it away. Mm-hmm. And agitation against the British government's land policy continued until again another royal commission was appointed in 1953. And this was appointed after the outbreak of Mau Mau violence in 1952. Right. And the British government, I think in this sense, fully acknowledged that one of the reasons for this outbreak of violence was the frustration over the land question. And so a commission was appointed, and it published its report in 1955. In its report, the commission recommended that this whole question of boundaries, exclusive reservation for this or that racial group should be stopped, and that land should be open to all people without discrimination. Especially
that was this commission that reported in 1955.
Mm-hmm. This report has not been acted upon so far, and the position now.
This commission was a British commission,
yes,
however.
This was appointed by the British government, but
although so that even the recommendation of the British government itself
is not being acted upon.
Uh-huh.
Well, here's a recipe for trouble, all right. The people of Kenya believing they have rights which have been denied them for 50 years. The British Commission bringing in a report agreeing with them 4 years ago and still nothing done about it. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Tom Mboya, for giving us this clear explanation of the problems you face as you seek freedom for your people. We're glad to have had you as a guest in our country and on this program, and we wish you well as you go back to Kenya. This is Edwin Randall.